Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Anyway, big insurance policy involved, yeah? Some guy took the tip of the blade, stuck it in his own shoulder blades, and he must have screwed up a few times because there was multiples back there.
Could you please be quiet?
Now picture that, but everywhere. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 393. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Brian. He's in the box, Dunaway.
Get me out of the box. Oh, hi, sir.
Hello.
Welcome to the Discreet Delivery Services, where we promise to not ask you what's in the box. Yeah. With that being said, I do have to ask, is there anything fragile in the box? There is. All right, I'm just going to slap a few fragile stickers on the box. Wow, this box is pretty heavy for a size. Okay, that's weird. Something seems to be rolling around inside. Is it a bowling ball? No, wait. Don't tell me. We have a strict policy on not asking what's in the box. Yeah. However, I do have to ask, is there anything perishable in the box? Well, there is. And you need it delivered by 7 this afternoon? That's same day delivery, dude. Now I'm the only one here till 6. Seriously, though, this thing is sloshing around like rotten cantaloupe. Is it a cantaloupe? No, don't tell me. Policy. Yeah. All right. Based on the size, weight, vague content description, strict deadline on delivery, and the fact you are covered in blood and creepy as hell, I'm going to go ahead and ask for $500 up front, all of which will go straight into my very 90s wallet on a chain wallet. Screw you, greedy corporate bastards. Yeah. Oh, and dude. Safe out there. It's been like raining for a week and everything is dark as hell. Storm is coming. Weirdo.
The wallet on a chain. That's pretty good.
Yeah, wallet on a chain.
Yeah,
it's get good. Off it.
It's great because you can yank it off. That's why I like those.
Right. I got this. I'm going to listen to some Nine Inch Nails.
That's right.
I'm doing it.
That's right. Also with us, Randy. Gluttony was gross, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy. So, looks like we're doing this. We've got the funding and the casting, and we're going to make this movie called Five-Va. Okay, you have to see how the number five is worked into the word five. So, the writers of our executive summary here. Okay, I'm just handing out the script. Okay, so, it's about a prankster who annoys people and the cops who slowly realize he's following a pattern of the five not-so-deadly sins. Okay, what are those? Number one, saying your head literally exploded. Okay. All right. Number two, wearing socks with thong sandals. We got, okay, yes. Number three, stacking bowls in an order other than size. Whoa. Number four, when it's time to exit the plane and someone from the row behind you is now in the aisle next to you. Whew, got to take a breather on that one, man. All right, number five. Okay, so we finally... Pretty much everything any other person does at the gym If you're listening to me right now at the gym, you're annoying someone right now.
That's true. That is so true.
Yeah, I would put that airplane thing above gluttony. Yeah. Actually, I would put that.
Yeah, I think I would too. It's a lot.
I don't know. Spaghetti gluttony is pretty gross.
Oh, a lot of spaghetti sauce. You see all that spaghetti sauce? My gosh.
Well, yeah. I actually got out the most.
The movie Seven.
Right.
It's pretty gross. Also, and finally, with us, Brian. My nails are 9 inches long. Ibbit.
Oh, hi, Detective Mills. Looks like I'm your new partner since Somerset retired. Hey, welcome back from mandatory leave. What's in this box? Well, I picked up some donuts. Here, have a cruller. Anyway, the captain put us together to work on these new bizarre murders that have been happening for the last 3 days. Let me open up the file here. Okay, first we have Jack, who was killed the day before yesterday when part of his spine was forcibly pulled out of his back. Okay. Oh, yesterday, they found Stan, a city planner who was asphyxiated on a rolled-up blueprint that was shoved down his throat. And then today, we have Roy, who was found chained to the bottom of his Japanese koi pond. So we have slip out the back, Jack, make a new plan, Stan, and need to be coy, Roy. I think we better put officers on all the city buses looking for a potential victim named Gus. And if I'm correct, the next 50 days will be murder.
Murder. And would that bus driver be Gus from Speed?
Sure. Well, his name was Gus, wasn't it? Nice reference.
Yeah, it was Gus. Yes. And he was in the library. Was that not him?
Was it? Oh, it was dude. That's the actor.
Yeah. What?
The one that said you're gonna. The one that turned on the music before he played the cards and says you're gonna miss us. The weird, frumpy looking face guy. That's awesome.
He was the bus driver in Speed.
Yes.
The guy played cards. What? What?
Right. If not, they have the exact same features and hairstyle.
I think
that's
him.
That hairstyle is unique.
I think that's him.
I just want to come back around. Paul Simon really only lists like 5 ways to leave your lover. What a jerk! I am so shortchanged.
Yeah.
It's such a gyp.
Yeah, it is a gyp. Plus all those, sorry, gypsies, we're not making fun of you. It's an old phrase. We use it still.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. I don't even associate that. That's so bad.
I know, it is. Well, whatever, man. We grew up
in the 80s. Hopping off the bus is not a way to leave your lover. I mean, it's a way to literally leave your lover.
It's a way to leave the bus.
Right.
It's a way to leave the bus.
Maybe the bus is your lover in Paul Simon's song.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They'll make a new plan? I mean, that's, you know.
I'm pretty sure, If you jump the bus, your lover's in there, and you jump the bus, they're going to follow you. I mean, that's just going to happen, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's true. If you're on a bus with anybody, lover, friend, acquaintance, and they suddenly get up and head for the door, you're going with them.
Yeah.
Wait, what's going on?
Yeah. My biggest complaint about that song growing up was that those guys all sound like old people. Stan, Gus.
Yeah.
Freaking nobody's named any of those names anymore.
Should have been a line in there, make it look like an accident, schmaccident.
Speaking of names, what do we think about Sa7N?
7N. Sa7N.
The name Sa7N.
Well, it's funny because, to make it searchable, they don't do that on others. You know, like, you don't search for it that way. Or I guess you could, but you just search for 7 and you get it. I've always wondered how that must feel like to a bunch of PR guys for a movie where they're like, all right, well, we like the idea, especially in the 90s, of jamming a number in here that somehow means something. And even though usually if you do that, if it's like a 5, that makes sense because we're talking about 5s. 5s can double for an S, or if it's another number like that's phonetic.
A seven is like a sideways or like a corner turned, catty-cornered V. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's a V that's been turned 220 degrees, and that just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, but also it's distorted because otherwise it'd just be a less than sign. You know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't work. So it's a bad. I'm just saying it's a bad idea. I think you could have just called this 7 and left the number out of the name. Like, just pull
it
out of
there. Was it a copyright
thing,
you think? Because you really couldn't probably copyright the word 7.
You can't copyright anything. You could make a movie tomorrow. Here's how it goes, Dunaway. Tomorrow, you could make a movie called 7 with a number 7 in the middle, and nobody can stop you. That's on the books. You can do that. There's a million movies that are all named the same. Nobody has to fight over it or say, hey, that's my movie. Now, there may be some exceptions where you can't go make a movie called Star Wars, and I don't know how that works. But there must be exceptions.
Wars.
Yeah, there must be exceptions. I just don't know.
I'm trying to think of other movies. I mean, there are movies where they've done that with the promotional materials, but they're not actually called that. Like the Fantastic Four movie, that was just a few years ago.
Yeah, the bad one.
With really Michael B. Jordan was Fantastic Five or something like that. Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it was.
But you know, there's like two movies named Twilight, and one is not like the other.
Yeah.
There's a.
So what do they do with Twilight? Do they put.
Remember, there's two movies called The Avengers, right? Mm-hmm, like, sure. There's one from like 19.
Oh, yeah. The Emma Peel. Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. There's no.
Is that The Avengers or Avengers?
No, they're just called The Avengers.
If there that's why Marvel had to call theirs Marvel's The Avengers, right, or something like that.
No. But see, that's the thing. You don't have to. You can name your movie Crash, and there are like five Crash movies.
That's it. And that's
there's two movies called Crash in particular that I cannot keep apart. Right. They are just the same movie as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah.
The thing that's funny is there were two movies in 2009 called Nine. One of them was the Daniel Day, or was it Daniel Day? It was the musical. And then there was the animated one with the little gunny sack people.
Yep. So here's another example. Hot Pursuit, 1987. Hot Pursuit, 2015. Bad Boys, 1983. Bad Boys, 1995. Totally unrelated. Avengers, or The Avengers, 1998. The Avengers, 2012. Kicking and Screaming, 1995. Kicking and Screaming, 2005. This happens all the time.
The odd thing is there is no other movie named Seven, right? That's the funny thing.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I don't think that the Seven in the Middle was meant to do anything other than be 90s cool. I think that's what that was for.
Ah.
Yeah.
Remember... Mm-hmm. About a decade ago, a funny dark comedy set in New Zealand called Black Sheep came out.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I remember that.
And it was about the killer sheep.
Yeah, It did not have Farley in it at all.
It didn't have Chris Farley and David Spade in it. Yeah. And it was like about 10 years after the movie Black Sheep, which I think is underrated by a lot. Mm-hmm. And it really bugged me that somebody could just make a movie and call it Black Sheep and just go on.
But I think this is the only movie I can think of where it's not just the promotional materials that have the number in the title. It's actually in the title. When you search for this thing on IMDb, it's a seven. And
no, does it say that there?
Yeah, it's on IMDb. It is, but yeah,
not Netflix, because that would be too hard for people to search.
Yeah. Right.
Netflix is like, nope.
I mean, if I search for seven though on IMDb, it comes up without the number seven and the numeral in it, so it comes up either
on IMDb.
Yeah, it came up for me.
It does. It says it at the top, but then it says it.
I mean, it's just meta search data. It's not anything too crazy, but I found some of the legality stuff. So here's the deal: if you look into it, number one, you can't copyright a title. You can trade, but you can't trade / pretend that you are another movie trying to take advantage of it.
I'm pretending.
So you can't be Star Wars, or let's use a better example. You can't be Crash. You can't be the third Crash movie and look like you're making the first movie again.
Marketplace confusion.
Basically, it's the Transmorphers.
Right.
It's whatever Blumhouse.
Asylum.
Asylum that does, you know, Transmorphers.
Yeah. They figured out a way around it.
Can I just say I really enjoy Blumhouse. They just really changed the market.
Look, you can love them. It's fine. Mm-hmm.
They've really done some good things.
The third part of this is you can trademark the look of a title, aka the art direction, but not the title itself. So this is a case where Seven probably... the look of that logo with the kind of chalky written whatever with the number in the middle, that's probably trademarked
a lot of the poster art is just written seven.
What, like the number seven?
Right, without the seven.
Oh, without the seven.
The poster shows a V and not a seven.
Yeah. Huh. That stuff's loose. It's just loose.
They just can't make up their mind.
Look, your stupid movie name has detracted FilmSack from talking about what's important about the movie and talking about your title for almost 10 minutes. Maybe it's a bad idea.
Well, I agreed, and we should definitely move on, but it's an interesting thing because if you think about it, if it was possible to copyright trademark the names themselves, we'd be out of names. We'd be done.
Oh, so, yeah.
It'd be like URLs. There'd only be a limited number of them, and we'd be calling movies like, you know, Frank Picks His Butt, and then we could never have another Frank Picks His Butt.
We could do them like hurricanes. You can use any title you want until one impacts society so much that you retire that name.
Mm. Really? So okay, there'll never be another Katrina, but there could be Really?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Be...
At what level?
Yeah. How many people have to die? How many people have to die for that to happen?
What is the cutoff?
Well, Katrina. So Katrina, Camille, Sandy, and
Hugo.
Andrew and Hugo. I think those are all gone now. I can't use them anymore.
Yeah. And Florence now.
Yeah. Oh, really? Is Florence
like raising a jersey up to the rafters with the
retire their number
2018 champ?
Oh, Katrina has now been retired.
Scott, the list is 100 names long. Agnes, Alicia, Alan, Allison, Andrew.
Oh, wow. Those
Anita.
Are all ones that have been.
Those are all retired names. Wow. For hurricanes. Yeah.
Well, eventually they're gonna have to call him Zontar and Phlebas and things.
Oh no, Zontar's coming.
Yeah.
Look out!
Zontar's making landfall.
Apparently, for our entire lives, the name Dora has been retired for hurricanes, and I just love that there was a hurricane named Dora.
Mm-hmm. Dora. Yeah, the explorer. Actually, people's explorers got destroyed in Dora. That's a funny thing to think about.
The map.
Anyway,
by the way, I have a rule that whenever the asylum comes up, even if it's a monthly, I have to catch us up on what they're doing. The their most recent film, Triassic World. Which is based on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Probably the smartest one they've done, because Triassic period is actually a period instead of going something weird, right?
Mm.
I think the smartest thing they ever did was make Avengers Grimm, because they somehow were able to continue to make Avengers movies just by calling them Avengers Grimm. The most recent one, based on Avengers Infinity War, is called Avengers Grimm Time Wars.
Mm.
Again, not doing very well, though. The asylum.
They're not doing well, but I need some qualification. Are you saying that they're not reviewing critically well? Because I don't think that's what they're aiming for. Are they meeting their budgets at least?
That's the thing. I have a hard time believing that they make enough money back on those compared to what those movies probably cost to make.
$10
It's, you know, some dude with After Effects and Adobe Premiere, but I don't even think they make enough to pay for an Adobe CC license.
Casper Van Dien and Lou Ferrigno is in this movie, right?
Which one?
Avengers Grimm.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
The star power alone.
But the stars are people named Lauren Parkinson, Mara Fairclough, Christina Licciardi. Like, it's not people that are costing the asylum a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Kimo Leopoldo as the wolf.
Kimo Leopoldo.
And it's a whole great thing, but I agree with Brian Ibbett. I don't understand where Asylum keeps getting money. It would never surprise me if you were just like, They're done. They can't make
money. I'm watching a lot of Ozarks. Maybe they're just laundering money.
No, I wonder about that. Maybe they're just like a dark arm of the porn industry or something. They're like, it's being.
We got to filter this money through something like
fund. Fund their adventures.
I wonder sometimes.
They're not commercially released, because I'd love to be able to look on Box Office Mojo and see how much Avengers Grimm made.
Yeah,
like $17.
Yeah,
that's right, exactly.
Couple of tickets. But aren't you glad they exist? Like, I'm glad they exist. I don't want a world where they don't exist. Like, I realize that, you know, they could go away and it doesn't really impact anybody, but the fact that they're making things like Transmorphers is just funny to me. And I think they should exist, so stick around, everybody.
It's funny that Lou Ferrigno is in Avengers and then also in, I mean, is in Avengers Grimm, but also does the voice of Hulk.
Yeah, or the body of Hulk, right? Like, he's the
the TV show he was the body of Hulk, but I'm talking about, like, in the more recent Avengers movies,
he's
the voice. When
I didn't know that.
You know,
is that true? I had no idea Lou Ferrigno did any voice stuff.
He does the
grunts and the
I
had no idea.
He's still a really good looking man at his age. And you know who else is really good looking? Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Are you trying to circle us back to this?
Yeah. Brad Pitt is a good looking guy in the movie Seven by David Fincher. One of the great directors, I think, ever to pick up a camera. So let's talk about it. The David Fincher film Seven, a film I have a very intimate relationship with. It turns out, because when my wife was pregnant with our first child, I saw this movie on DVD, I believe, possibly it may have been VHS. I don't remember. but I think DVD. And it was the ending was so shocking to me. And we're not treating anything in this story as spoilers, everybody. Seven's a very old movie. If you don't know what happened, then I can't help you.
1995.
It would be
pretty good idea, though. Like, if you really like movies and you haven't seen it, to watch it before listening to
us. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
It's a movie with a lot of twists and turns. This was my first time watching it.
Oh my gosh! Oh, yeah. Wow. I can't wait to talk about that.
Let's Scott finish his story because he needs to get to the.
All right, yeah. So here's the big finish on that story. So we watched it. I thought it was great. I love a good, you know, serial killer crime thriller thing. That's great. All in on all of it until we get to the end, and we realize that it's. And by the way, pause if you're listening and you don't want to hear spoilers. Okay, so. Gwyneth Paltrow's, it's her head in the box.
We don't know for sure.
Well,
could be the baby. Yeah.
Okay.
Could be her.
Fair enough, foot. But probably not. There's wispy hairs frame. And stuff, right?
Not a blonde wispy hair. We actually see, like, there's a couple frames of film where you see Gwyneth's head.
No.
Totally. It's like you can even see it in the Netflix transfer.
Hold on.
Did you actually see a head? I saw a little bit of hair, but, you know, she could have hobbit feet. I'm not sure. Maybe it could be the baby. Could be the actual baby itself.
I'm looking.
I don't remember. That's one thing about Seven I had forgotten about. I was going in thinking, oh, the kids can't watch this because it's so gory. Mm-hmm. But actually, once I started watching it, I'm like, it's kind of gross in parts, but most of it was the way they painted it, because they would show you a scene. And then they would get verbally descriptive about the scene, and they would always kind of have you peering out the corner of your eye from the camera.
Mm.
And so there wasn't as much actual on-screen gore.
That's why it's worse. It's because it makes your imagination go. And this is why. So here's where my story goes. While Ibit is looking up that headshot, because I want to see it too. I don't remember seeing it. But when this happened, it all hit me at once. I went, okay, well, so hold on a minute. He stayed with her and tortured her for a while. Mm-hmm. She's pregnant. She's the nicest person in this movie.
She's the only woman.
She's the only woman. She is now, he shows up at the place with blood all over himself. That's her blood. He's the final victim because she's the second to last victim. Okay, now that kicks in. And the idea of beheading a pregnant woman and putting her head in a box to drive Brad Pitt mad and have him shoot him was so abstainable to me. I was so upset by that. And this just shows how effective this movie is, I think, or at least it was at the time. It just got me in the worst way. When that movie's credits started rolling, I took the DVD out of the player, went outside, it was in the winter, and I threw it in the snow. I was so angry. I was so freaking pissed at that movie. And it took me a long time to see it the second time. This is my third viewing.
And you know what? Because you did that, John Doe won.
I know he did, right?
Exactly. But any movie
he
that
had
can
the upper hand.
You,
any movie that can make you leave the theater or throw something out in the yard, that to me is an effective movie.
It's very effective. You're not wrong.
If you're having a movie that ends like that, it's like, holy Moses.
No, you're not wrong. And part of it is Brad Pitt's performance. I think he's incredible in that moment. And it's one of the most memorable things I've ever seen in a movie, and it's still shocking, but it's
both laugh-worthy and also extremely dramatic.
It's something you can meme, and then but also respect for its drama. Absolutely, it's like it's both those things, and it's really something, man. Oh, but the first time, it's really one of those moments. I was sure that I had just seen the worst thing I could see, and it stopped being a movie at that point. It started being like weirdly threatening, like it's just because I all these father like genes kicked in, and I couldn't deal with it, and took me a long time to get over that.
Got me here in this movie is two things. The David Fincher just had an amazing eye for how to direct this movie and what he wanted to show on screen, and he got a great cinematographer who just made some great classic framing shots, and just it just seemed like all the way through the movie they just kept pulling me deeper and deeper in to the emotions that they wanted to give me, and they nailed it. Even after all these years and seeing the movie multiple times, every time I watch it, it's just like this movie just pulls me straight in. I don't look at my phone, I don't look at any distractions. I am just, it just slowly, you just sink into it.
Yep.
It's a movie that makes you feel like you've got to wash your hands constantly.
Absolutely.
Too. Like, just the look and feel so of it is very dirty. Grimy and everything's dripping and wet.
The
and
set design was freaking amazing. They, really, like I said, yeah. Fincher's ability to hire the right people and to express his vision and to get all this on film.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen to this. There's a process they used. It says here, the film's brooding dark look was achieved through a chemical process called bleach bypass, wherein the silver of the film stock was not removed, which in turn deepened the dark, shadowy images of the film and increased its overall tonal quality. So, you know, today they do this with, like, you know, filters and Premiere or something, but back right. then it was literally like a chemical process on the negative to turn it to make it darker, make it grittier and grimier. And I think that stuff holds up. Like,
all of it holds up. It all does not look over processed. It just looks good.
Yeah.
Our cinematographer here is a very highly regarded Iranian filmmaker named Darius Khanji. The same year as Seven, he was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Cinematography for the Madonna movie Evita, which looks very similar to this movie.
Oh, interesting. Beautiful. I don't think I've ever seen that one. That we may have to do that one day. Because Don't Cry For Me Argentina was a thing I would sing for no reason to people to annoy them, but I never saw the movie that all that was in. Mm-hmm. But I would always go, "Don't cry for me, Argentina."
He also did Alien Resurrection.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
My only,
which also starred the dude who was the massage parlor.
Oh yeah, the dildo dude. He was a massage parlor. Was there a massage?
Well, you know,
there?
Not a massage.
He was a leather worker, right?
Whatever that deal.
No, not
leather and knife worker.
No.
The guy who actually wore it.
Yeah, the guy that wore the weird thing.
Oh, yes. Oh, you're right.
The hyperventilating guy that was freaking out. Oh, that guy, dude. There's a piece of trivia about that guy. It says here, in preparation for his dramatic scene in the interrogation room, Leland Orser is the name of that actor, would breathe in and out so rapidly, so that his body would be oversaturated with oxygen, giving him the ability to hyperventilate. He also did not sleep for a few days in order to achieve his character's disoriented and pale look. So, yeah, that guy got into it, man.
He
totally did.
It's not Method Man, I promise.
Antonio's Method Man.
Comma, man. In our Discord, I've posted the screenshot, you know, the freeze frame of what they show in that brief... You know, flash of Gwyneth Paltrow's head. It's
no,
her head.
That's not her head. That's him having a flashback, thinking about her.
It
totally could be because there's no blood or anything. But no, it also could be her head in a box with linen around it to keep it from rolling around.
That's not. But I see what you mean. But no, that was he saw that, which he did not see in the box. So either
I'm trying to remember, do they show that flash as we're looking at Brad Pitt or as we're looking at
when we're looking at Brad Pitt, when he starts squeezing his eyes as tight as he can and he's having these white flashes.
He's thinking about her laying next to him and, you know, his
looking
life is flashing before his eyes in a very real way because it's starting to dawn on him.
Any case, it's Gwyneth Paltrow's head on the
that
screen.
That is a real, but that, no, that has a really good, that is really good because you did. He made you put her head in that box with that imagery.
No, I agree. So I actually think it's very effective in that way. Also, just for the record, I don't know if anyone's seen Shakespeare in Love or any of the Avengers movies, but Gwyneth Paltrow's head is often shown in these films. I just want to put that out there.
This is true, yeah.
Steve Zissou, all that stuff. Or no, that wasn't her movie. Or who am I thinking of? Didn't we see her in... Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Royal Tenenbaums. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Point is... She's this is just a bummer, man. Like where that character goes, that being John Doe and how that is all getting resolved is unlike anything I'd ever seen and almost didn't happen because the studio is like New Line was like, look, this is too rough. We can't have this as the ending. They balked at the film's ending, said, you've got to come up with something else. Brad Pitt takes this hardcore stand and says, I refuse to be in this movie. I pull out everything. I cancel the contract. I don't have anything to do with this movie. And I ream you guys up and down in the public. If the ending is changed, do not change what we're doing with the ending. And they relented and didn't change it. But it goes to Brian Dunaway's point. What makes this ending so powerful, and I think most of the stuff in the movie, isn't that it's overtly gory, because it really isn't. Mm-hmm. It's not even overtly gross.
The only murder you ever see is Brad Pitt killing John Doe.
Yeah, and it's only implied otherwise. Everything else is implication and aftermath. Mm-hmm. And that's so effective. It's like cutting the ear off the guy in Reservoir Dogs while the camera's somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like, right, it's just right. Much better than showing me what it looks like to have an ear cut off. It's such a smart film thing.
The only real, truly disturbing scene was when Sloth suddenly takes in a breath of air. Even though I had totally forgotten about Sloth because I'm so hung. It seems like when I left the movie, all I can remember all I could remember was Gluttony. It's like, oh, that Gluttony guy. Oh, that was gross. But really, then I kind of forgot about Sloth, and then Sloth, Baby Ruth. Absolutely. Yeah. That guy.
It would have been great if that would, instead of just taking in a big gasp of air, he said, Baby Ruth.
I just want to disagree with you. That was not the only truly gory scene in the film. Like, it was like there were so many disturbing things in this movie.
Well,
like,
disturbing.
And the first time, like, for some reason, I was kind of lost at the beginning. Not lost. I was not highly entertained at the beginning because it jumps in sequence into an investigation, and I think the point they're going for there is to give you an idea of Morgan Freeman's character before Brad Pitt. Just the fastest we can give you an idea that this person exists and has a life before Brad Pitt comes along. And in there, he's like investigating a crime and he asks, did the kid see it? And someone is just an asshole to him in that moment. And I was just like, what? You know, like, this movie doesn't set me in the right frame for Morgan Freeman and character. And it never gets there. Like, it never actually explains what's troubling him so much. It gives you, he's troubled. He can't sleep without a metronome, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But it just depicts all of those things. And it's supposed to put you off. You're supposed to be like, I feel uneasy. The entire movie, you're supposed to feel uneasy. But then the first time they go in and they see Gluttony, it's like, oh, this is a really gory movie. Like, there should be a movie rating that's like, you can't watch it until you're like at least 25. This is the movie that, like, it's horrible to see. And I'm kind of glad I didn't see it in the 90s because I would have been incorrigible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a fair thing to say. I mean, his character was never, it was always kind of tightly held. He never really let himself out. And never really sort of expressed where he was coming from. But I always assumed it was like, look, you've had a long career in this nasty city. Which, did they ever say what city? Is it New York?
No.
They say what city it is.
They go out of their way to never say. They even say, Gwyneth Paltrow says upstate, and I thought that was fun.
Yeah.
If she says upstate, then they're probably, that's why I guess I assume New York. But the idea that they're just in the worst borough or wherever they're at, dealing with the worst possible criminals, It works for me, even if it feels a little like a place out of time or, you know, I don't know, if it didn't, like, maybe not even a real place, but it's got this just great rhythm of old guy, sick of it, worn out, I'm out of here, new guy, still eager and hungry to make a mark. Mm-hmm. That conflict is interesting, and then to have them have to work together later, and then in the very end, really, what you end up with is almost like a father-son problem. Mm-hmm. As soon as the box arrives, it's like, oh my gosh, and also knowing what he knows, that she was pregnant. She's the only one she's only confided that in Morgan Freeman at that lunch. Like, oh, see, this is why it upset me so bad, because just like in other parts, like Dunaway was saying, where they don't show the thing happening, it's not gory, it's just in your head. Mm-hmm. This is
worse.
You're
visualizing all that stuff that she went through.
Oh, just the trauma she would have gone through from the minute he came to her door to the minute he left with her head is so upsetting. Now, oh my gosh.
And there is a play that we never get an answer to. Morgan Freeman was very specific that if you do decide to not keep the baby, then don't tell him. And so we wait for that moment for her to express it. So we're kind of waiting on the fate of the child during the movie. And there's a scene when they're both shaving their chest in the sink, which is exactly what all policemen do. How are you doing?
They need to put on the wire. Yeah, just
right. But we got to. Anyway, Brad Pitt wants to tell him something so bad, but he won't do it. And I'm like,
well, and does you got to realize that that was the day before she gets killed. And it's like,
that was the day of.
The day of, because he, because no, 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 no,
the discussion between Morgan Freeman and Gwyneth Paltrow was the day before she gets killed.
Right.
And so there wasn't enough time for anything to have happened or have been decided.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The only thing there is Morgan Freeman's character finds out that there's a pregnancy and Brad Pitt's character doesn't know about it. That's it. Like, mm-hmm. it could have been a much more subtle, like, oh, wow, did she go get an abortion before she got killed? But there just isn't time for that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no, not enough time.
Yeah, I agree.
And there was only one opportunity for them to discuss it, and that's when he came home. And I also feel like that was meant to escalate it to the point it's like, oh, regret. You didn't get a chance to, you just never know when you're going to die. And there's a lot of layers there.
Yeah,
for sure. The timing is the weird thing. So, all right. So John Doe goes to Detective Mills' house, meets up with Gwyneth, tortures her, probably kills her, cuts off her head, gets blood all over his shirt and all over the place, mm-hmm. puts the head in a box.
Yeah.
He's still bloody when he shows up at the police station.
Yep.
So the order of events means he has to show up at UPS or whatever delivery service covered with blood.
It sounds like they may have done a pickup.
Your opening, but it's,
that was, you know, the thing.
I want to suggest that we don't try too hard to unravel plot holes, because the movie has plot holes, and I mean, so does the game. Having seen the game several times before seeing Seven, I'm here to say I actually like the game more in David Fincher's.
Oh, list. You're insane, but that's okay. I still love you, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's,
but
as long as it's only a little bit more.
But this movie, if you get into why would a detective even open the box, he would assume it's a bomb or something that. He would feel endangered. He would run away from that. Like, right. It's just like, as soon as you start trying to unravel plot holes, this movie falls apart. So just don't. It's better to just take it at face value.
But you could also, I mean, this part, that's the thing. So much is face value and you're expected to fill in the blanks. I feel the same way about even stuff like that. It's like, well, he put on an overcoat and a pair of gloves and took it in and then took that all off. So he still had his blood, or he had it picked up because that service offered a pickup service, or, you know, like, you could go anywhere with it.
Well, and it's also part of the story as well. They talk about things you get used to and that you no longer notice. And, you know, was he able to go? Was that the point? Was he able to go in, have a package delivered with blood on his shirt, take a taxi cab back to the police station with blood on his shirt, walk into the police station, walk all the way halfway through the building before
the lobby.
And then scream? Fire, because no one was looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't rape was it was pointless. Was, so he yelled fire.
I thought that was really effective.
Yeah,
like that really got me thinking. Oh yeah,
that's a
in a big city.
Yeah.
There's ugly, crazy, dirty people everywhere, and you just walk past them and don't look.
You're so desensitized to it.
Yeah, and for Kevin Spacey to get attention, he has to scream. Like, that actually worked for me. Yeah. I was okay with it.
Yeah, detective.
And he might have been wearing the trench coat and gloves, like, right through the taxi cab and right up until he got into the police station.
Yeah, all those things are possible, but that's a really, that scene is famous for just being like, oh my gosh, it's him. Oh my gosh. And he does that final yell. It's just like something else. It really grabs you. So, like 100%. It's very effective. And immediately you go, oh my gosh, what did he do? We know there's two more victims.
Yeah.
Where's he been?
And of course, our mind is supposed to suspect. It's like, oh, there's going to be two more victims. Well, obviously, the tension has ratcheted up because we got the two police officers and they're going out to a field. It's going to be them. You just know it. He's smart. He's already proven that he can outwit them and
he's always physical. Like multiple steps ahead of them.
Yeah.
So, it feels like you're as a smart guy, though, John Doe is leaving a lot up to a delivery service that, I mean, that basically everything kind of hinges on that. Otherwise they're all sitting there. Well, I just got a notification on my phone. It's going to be about half an hour late. Do you mind if we just kind of hang out here next to the dead dog and just kind
sweet.
Of,
yeah, a little bit. I feel like you know what it is? The music drives it. It's Howard Shore, right?
Oh,
did the music?
So
I think it's Howard Shore. He did the score stuff anyway. And it's funny. I was thinking in the middle of this thing, and I thought of Ibbit, of course, every time music stuff comes up. But the Nine Inch Nails connection at the beginning with that cool remix of whatever that song is
Closer.
Called. Closer.
Closer, which is great.
You only barely hear Reznor's voice in that, except at the very end of the credit sequence, which is so good.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I thought you do hear
all of Trent Reznor's favorite weird sounds.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
All of his favorite weird sounds. But I thought, well, this must be their first collaboration, because nowadays they're inseparable. Mm-hmm. Everything they do, he's doing full scores for. But this Howard Shore score, back to my point, is very just like... it's like ratchet up the tension in every scene that he's cranking it in. And that, I think, is underappreciated for what this movie... Like, the movie's impact is absolutely contained within the Howard Shore sound theme.
For me, where the movie really hits its musical note, so to speak, is when it plays that Johann Sebastian Bach suite.
That was beautiful.
Because it goes on forever. It's like, it's like, oh, library, this is a 10-minute song. Let's play the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like that, that's for me is the music of the movie, because it is supposed to take you into Morgan Freeman's character as an old school, real intellectual detective. And it does. Like, I really get there, and I really get to sense all of his feelings, you know?
Mm-hmm. It also reminded me that the internet would have really helped everybody in this movie.
Oh, my gosh. It would change everything, right? But didn't you ask yourself, why would he go rent? Why would he go check these books out at the library that surely they would be able to track him back? I mean, just from looking at the library cards, not even going some kind of weird flag database that they, you know, say that you know, for they're watching or whatever. I mean, I just thought it was going to go to the library and look at the library cards and go, oh, look, this was checked out by
John Doe.
In 1996, I was spending a lot of time in libraries, and I can tell you, they didn't get rid of those paper cards until like 2005.
Right. And they showed them. They showed them in the actual, when he was scanning and copying. So I know it was there. But yeah, that was a long stretch for me on that part.
I liked it. I liked that a little bit.
It was fun being paranoid, thinking,
All I could think about though was like, man, if you guys just had a little bit of internet access, you would have had. You wouldn't have to go to the damn library.
I would not have thought it was Marquis de Chardet if they had the internet.
Right.
I was really noticed the difference in how things have changed when they were having their dinner, when it was, you know, Brad Pitt, and Gwyneth Paltrow, and Morgan Freeman, when they were having that dinner. I was like, wow, that is so isolated. Just three people. There's no news on the TV blaring. People aren't checking their cell phones. They're just staring at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little annoyed by the shaking of the elevated train going through.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Because what was depicted was like a Category 6 earthquake.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
Like, What was depicted was like, if that happened in your home 50 times a day, your home would eventually be shaken into rubble.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Agreed.
Yes.
But it made for that great scene later where they're doing some research there after dinner, and they both are just casually holding things that would normally be falling.
Yes.
Right.
Like the movie isn't
hand on the wine glass, and
the movie isn't 100% afraid to have a little bit of comedy in there, even though it's subtle and small. But I appreciate it.
I have never seen Morgan Freeman embrace a laugh as much as he did.
Yeah,
I have never seen him laugh like that. That was fantastic.
It's a disturbing laugh face. You know, some people have ugly cry face. He has weird laugh face.
Yeah,
he went too far.
Yeah, I didn't expect it. In fact, when I captured it, I think I even named the file something like, "Who's ever heard this before? This is like, whoa!" He's showing
the
us something.
Penguins would begin their slow march across the air.
Stupid penguins. Yeah, like that's super weird, and I grabbed it, so we'll be able to discuss it later. But he's so this is Morgan Freeman at his Morgan Freemanist, I think.
Yeah,
and I like it. Like, any minute then, I expected him to talk about climbing through 300 miles of shit and coming out clean on the other side.
Yeah,
it's whenever he gets to play that father, that unpredictable father role, or not unpredictable, but that unnatural father role, like
It's
like he was
same,
with Dufresne, like he is with Detective Mills.
Million Dollar Baby, Driving Miss Daisy, in the
Always
Dark Knight
helping
movies.
The white folks out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So out. The white folks.
Yeah, always helping the white folks. No, you're right. It's the same guy. And in the end of the day, when we're done with his career, we may all look back to it and go, you know, every character is kind of the same. And that's okay with me. I'm fine with it.
But that's okay. You know what? Sometimes if it, during the phase of someone doing something, we gripe about it. It's like, oh, I've seen it too much. But the further you get away from that moment in time, the more you realize, man, I wish we had even more of that to look back on. And it seems like
there is a lot. Like give me your best Morgan Freeman moment in all Morgan Freeman movies, Dunaway.
I like a lot of them.
Scott loves him talking about Andy Dufresne in third person.
His entire thing in Shawshank is probably my favorite thing he ever did. But
right,
yeah,
you right. Got one. Ibbot, you got a Morgan Freeman moment in all movies.
It's hard not to put Shawshank as the best one. Yeah, I'm taking a look really quickly at other things that he's done. I mean, God, how awesome would it have been if Easy Reader had all those journals to read, all of John Doe's journals.
Right. Yeah, dude.
The Electric Company.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I got to say,
like the whole, what was the Jim Carrey God?
Bruce Almighty. Bruce Almighty.
That was pretty lame.
I'm going to go with
Unforgiven was good.
Yeah, Unforgiven was great. He was really good in that. I mean,
he's
great.
I think his presence on some of All Fears really amped up what was being shown on screen.
That is underrated film.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So I think I'm going to go with if I can't have The Shawshank, I'm going to take the Sum of All Fears.
Yeah, if you've planted your flag in Shawshank, it's hard to find another one that I liked as much as that. Because his the stuff that he adds on the side, like president in Deep Impact. I'm looking through some of these things, like remembering, oh yeah, he was great. I mean, was it Crichton? The Along Came a Spider, the Alex Cross novels.
Not Crichton, but I know who you mean. Well, the ones with the Judd girl. What's her name?
Ashley Judd. Well, she was in one of them, but he was in.
Good morning, Eastie girls.
Alex Cross for a couple movies, didn't he?
Yes.
Did he? I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
My favorite was when he was on the Electric Company.
Yeah, Electric Company was pretty good.
Remember when he played Spider-Man?
He wasn't Spider-Man, dude. He was never Spider-Man.
That was totally him. He was totally in the Spider-Man costume. Well,
he may have been, but I don't think that was...
What, on Electric Company?
Yeah, I don't think it was him
because
there
was a point where Easy Reader and Spider-Man worked together, so no way. No way could it have been him.
Yeah.
That was film trickery, my friend.
Don't mess with Ibbot's remembrances and understandings of all things Electric Company.
I may have watched a little bit of Sesame Street, but man, I was all about the funk and the soul of Electric Company.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun Moreno screaming, "Hey, you guys!"
Here's a fun piece of trivia.
Yeah,
how many Alex Cross books has James Patterson written?
Too many.
Just guess.
I was reading these for a while. I'm going to say at least 10. Probably
you're correct. At least 10.
At least
it's probably okay. I'm going to go so far to say 20 of them. But somebody else is writing them now, isn't?
Oh no! He just put out a new one this year.
Wow.
It's called Target Alex Cross.
Somebody? Oh, really? Okay. Nope. Then I'm going to say 20.
So the answer is, believe it or not, 27 Alex Cross books.
Wow.
I've probably read four.
I haven't read any of them.
Yeah, I think I've read about four of them.
Yeah.
That's 24 mainline Alex Cross books and three that reference Alex Cross extensively. And it's like, how is that not like a James Bondian film series?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's because they haven't done so well, unfortunately. They did the two or three with Morgan Freeman, and then they tried bringing it back with
Tyler Perry,
but just one movie with Tyler Perry, and that was the one that was just called Alex Cross, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I kind of, when I was reading them, I always needed Alex Cross to be like Luke Cage looking. Mm-hmm. And so Morgan Freeman was like, oh, this is a different take on Alex Cross than I had in my head. And that kind of was a little off-putting.
Mm. I never read any of that stuff, so I have no connection to that character. I don't know a thing about it, and I haven't seen any of
Morgan
the Alex Cross
Freeman
movies.
Is fantastic. And I'll tell you what my favorite moment of Morgan Freeman is. Yeah. And that's his great line in The Dark Knight.
Mm.
When he says, let me get this straight. You think your client one of the wealthiest and most powerful men in the world, is secretly a vigilante who spends his night beating criminals to a pulp with his bare hands. And your plan is to blackmail this person? His delivery, his everything, like, he is just like, there is no person in the world that I would have wanted in that spot, in that moment, than Morgan Freeman.
He was great. Sure. He was the perfect, what's his character's name? Shoot.
Lucius Fox.
Lucius Fox, yeah. He was a perfect casting for that. No question.
You know, there have been the recent movies, the magic ones, Now You See Me and Now You See Me Too. Yeah. Thinking about those, he is one of the best parts of those movies.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, he's great.
But that's not saying a lot.
I'm going to say, that's not saying much because...
Right. Yeah. But you've got Ruffalo, you've got Morgan
It's not
Freeman
that I didn't like the movies, they just... Mm-hmm. They just kind of fell flat for me.
Mm.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, I understand. I don't know.
For something that's supposed to be magic and supposed to be blowing me away,
yeah,
kind of went meh.
Yeah. You felt like it was supposed to be blowing you away? You thought that was a thing?
I did. I felt like there's a little bit too much hand-waving.
Mm.
In a show about magicians.
You guys tell me if this sounds like a real deal or not. Denzel Washington turned down the part that went to Brad Pitt, telling Entertainment Weekly that the film was too dark and evil. Washington later regretted his decision upon seeing the screening. Does that sound real?
Believe it.
Okay.
That's real. I think that's real.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I could totally see him in that.
What's in the box?
Yeah,
how would he say it?
I don't know.
Give us a Denzel.
How do you do a Denzel?
I don't know if I could do it. I've never tried to do a Denzel.
I don't know how you do. What is it? How do you do it?
Yeah. It's a there's a little bit of a swagger. Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's the swagger, and then there's the it devolves into Will Smith for me.
Yeah,
what's in the box?
Imagine if it had been Will Smith. That would have been really interesting.
I can just now that he is antsy enough. See, what you need for that character, you need an antsy character.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt played that really well.
Yeah.
Will Smith also is really good.
And let me come to one of my first timer complaints about this movie. I wrote several. First timer complaint, I don't understand what Brad Pitt's condition is. If the movie would just give me a consistent, he's manic depressive or he's got anger management issues or whatever, like I could have gone with it, but he is the most uneven character I've seen in a while, and I just don't feel like he's ever depicted consistently.
Mm.
Do you think intentionally? Or do you think it's just a character trait? I didn't see it as like, wow, he needs to be diagnosed.
I felt like you
have to give me personality reasons for him to be able to pull the trigger at the end, and you don't want to just get there all at once and be like, well, look at how mad you would be if you found out about that. No, he needs to be an angry person. He needs to be impulsive and so on throughout the film.
He's a loose cannon
for that impact, and it's just like, there's times when you're just like, oh, I like this guy. I identify with him. And then there's times when he flies off the handle and you're all, whoa, where'd that come from? And it just wasn't depicted in a way that I was able to attach to it. I constantly was questioning what's going on with his personality.
Hmm. Yeah, I never felt that way with him. I feel like he's doing, it's kind of an extension of his role in what's the monkeys one? With
12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys. What's the monkeys one?
It's the 1+5.
Yeah, the 1+5.
Speaking of which,
yeah.
Boy, movies with numbers in the title that aren't like sequel numbers,
mm-hmm.
Who's done more of those? Bruce Willis or Brad Pitt? Because Brad Pitt was in Oceans 11, 12, and 13. And yeah, I know there's sequels, but it wasn't like Oceans 11, 2 and Oceans 11, 3.
Right.
12 Monkeys.
I'll tell you who's done more of them. Paul Walker, Vin Diesel, Dwayne Johnson, and Tyrese Gibson.
I still
have done
say
the most of them.
Fifth Element, 12 Monkeys, right. For Bruce Willis. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
We're going to, seriously, 20 years from now, we're going to be talking about Fast 17, Furious 17 or something.
Yeah, that series will continue to happen as long as people continue to go. I don't know. I think it has a shelf life, though. At some point, you kind of run your course.
They need to have the last one, right? Like, wouldn't you enjoy the cultural event of knowing here's the final Fast and Furious movie ever?
I thought
starring
they already had the last one. And then they said, just kidding. Didn't they pretend like they were going to do the last one?
As long as they make money, they will always be a Fast and Furious.
I don't know that I agree with that, but like 6 years ago, the people who owned the property were like, we have plans for 10 movies. And it's like, okay, all right, keep them coming.
Yeah. Keep going. Hurry up, because Vin Diesel, he's going to start looking like Jabba the Hutt soon. You got to hurry up. Starting to look a little funky, that guy.
So not nice.
So of the murders, this is something we got to ask because this is what we do during horror movies. May as well apply it to our thrillers, which is what you'd call this, right? What genre are we in here? What is this? Crime thriller?
Oh, absolutely a thriller.
Okay.
Yeah, thriller. You know, Seven Deadly Sins.
Crime thriller, I'd say.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it horror. I'd say it's a thriller.
Right, I would too.
It's a horrifying thriller.
Yeah.
Right, and it almost borderlines supernatural. It plays with the supernatural a little bit.
I mean, it's really just Spacey's character who thinks he's got that all figured out, but it's not like they're, you know, there's no actual supernatural anything happening. He's just a freak.
And it's got some mystery thrown in. Like there's crime, thriller, and mystery.
Sure. So of the murders, and I'm keeping Gwyneth Paltrow out of this because F that still sucks. I'm not even that big of a fan. The implications are so so rotten, man. Right. My gosh. But so I'm not counting her.
That's
but
worse
of everybody.
Than the-
Everybody
Vagina
else,
stabbing?
I'm giving it to Sloth or not? Sloth, because Sloth is to me the. Again, they paint that picture without showing it. A year in that bed.
Yes, yeah, that's the most tortured. Absolutely, that's the longest amount of pain
that really
and
got
suffering.
Me.
Ugh. But the most, I mean, the one that it's just horrifying to think about is both the experience for the dude and the hooker in that.
Right.
Oh my gosh, dude!
Sex parlor with
the vagina stabbing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say no. You're going to have to shoot me. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do this.
That's what I thought too. Because I was like, I was trying to generate sympathy for the guy, but I'm like, even if somebody had a gun in my mouth,
yep.
No, there's like, no sympathy for that guy.
I guess I'm just dead.
Have to shoot me.
There's no sympathy for
that guy.
Is
married
that guy.
To Gene Triplehorn.
Oh, really?
From Waterworld.
Yeah. From Waterworld, really?
So he had something to live for. I might change my answer now. No,
that actor is I find that actor very interesting. He's always just a little off the whack, and it's fun to watch him
off the whack.
Yeah, but he but yeah, like that's the implications
most
of
interesting
every one of these
character
murders.
In this movie for me is Arlie Ermey as the police captain.
Right. We haven't even brought him up.
And he's interesting to me because he acts as a sounding board, not a captain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that fascinates me. That I'm fascinated by the idea of this guy who is observing all of this and sometimes interacting with it. But generally speaking, he stays at the police station and he just gets things bounced off of him. But man, Arlie Ermey was so great. Rest in peace, man. You were just like, I couldn't take my eyes off of him. I was questioning whether those eyebrows were real or fake.
Yeah,
the only thing that bothered
those.
Me with, and it wasn't his character's fault, but he was leading the scene that I hate. Mm. I hate the walking plan. Don't give me the walking plan. I don't like it.
Really?
They're all walking down the steps and they're still planning.
They're on their way to do the thing and they're covering
all the specific details and I'm like, what? I can't hear.
Yeah, but that's a common thing. Cool. I'll bet you couldn't watch a single 5 minutes of The West Wing. It would kill you.
That's a Sorkin trademark. Yeah.
Very Sorkin-y.
Let's plan this on the way. We're so busy. We gotta plan this on the way. Come on, let's walk.
Off filmmakers, you know, like there's tons of reality where police sit in a classroom and wait to get instructions. Yeah. And that just makes bad film. That's who would want to watch that?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Nobody. That's
me.
Who. That's the answer.
Yeah, I'd prefer it.
The scene that freaked me out, one of the scenes that freaked me out the most, just visually, is when he shows up, they're banging on the door and nobody's answering, and he shows up with a grocery bag and just stands there in the silhouette.
Oh, yeah. That was creepy.
Very effective stuff, man. That's just like, ugh, that dude down the hall's trouble. Hurry up
and make the decision. Their audio work was amazing. Not only did they oversaturate all the sounds, they oversaturated all the sounds, and then their Foley work was amazing because those gunshots, you know, that was filmed for that movie. That was not stock.
Yeah.
That was brand new things. Yeah. Each one of them was unique.
Yeah, it sounded
really
good.
And just the other sounds in that apartment building that you're not sure is that the killer doing something or is that just normal screaming indecipherable noise from the apartment building. I love that.
Yeah. The whole apartment, everything about that apartment was just,
It was meant to make you feel uneasy. Awful.
When he's the camera, or when he's the reporter, I'd forgotten that he was the reporter. I've done that three times now. I forget that he's the reporter until I see it again.
I did too.
So notes from a first-time viewer. Everything in this film, every like wall in this film is gross. There, no one lives in a home with a recently painted wall, and by recently I mean in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Which sets a tone, right? Like you really feel dirty the whole movie. Like even in the end scene, which has no walls, you're out in the dirt. They drive down a literal dirt road. So it bugged me. But then there were times when I don't feel like they depicted that right. Like there were times when they were doing exteriors in the city and it was clearly a sunny day and they were using a rain machine. And that really knocked me out of the movie. I'm like, why don't you guys walk 20 steps back and get out of that rain?
No, so I never even really noticed it. I didn't notice it. I guess I wasn't looking that hard. I like the noir quality of it. I mean, here yet again, I'm surprised Dunaway is not arguing that the rain meant something.
The rain meant that they had to have a rain machine constantly because
it absolutely means something. It rains the entire time that Kevin Spacey's doing his main crimes, and then when they finally catch him, it stops raining and it doesn't rain anymore. Like it's sad. It brings you down. It's gross. You have to prepare against it. Like, the rain is absolutely tied to all of this other like ugliness.
In lots of places, they did a really good job with their rain machines. But there were several times when Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman were riding in the car, and it looked like somebody was just pouring a bucket. I mean, it didn't look like rain at all. It's like somebody was pouring a bucket of water.
Brad Pitt standing out there with the coffee, and it's jumping on him. Yeah.
That's a little bit too much.
Well,
you know in that level of rain, you got to get those little green sticks that go in the hole of the coffee lid. Those little sticks?
Rain
you got to have those because the rain will go even through that little mouth hole.
Totally. This is 95. Totally. Did he have that kind of technology then?
Sure, we did.
Not. Yeah, Starbucks might not have invented that yet.
I remember
still folding up a straw.
I remember those tiny little straws, the little red straws from when I was a tiny kid. Yeah. I think those have been around forever. Those are not new.
That's just for stirring, though.
No, we're talking about the little plugs that go that Starbucks has that when you're getting coffee for the office, you got to go and put those little plugs in each of the holes of all the drinks.
Right.
Because what if they slosh around in the car, if you're walking in horrible rain?
They will.
They will. Yeah. Those plugs are. Is that a Starbucks invention? Did they make that?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they invented them. They surely did embrace them.
Yeah, they.
they give them away like they're. Free.
Yeah,
it's funny how that really stood out for all of us, and I imagine all viewers. Like, Brad Pitt shows up; he's weird. Morgan Freeman isn't getting along with him at first, and so then, like, you see him standing in the rain with two cups of coffee, and you can tell he's trying to make peace. He's trying to impress Morgan Freeman, and Morgan Freeman just like, nah. And so Brad Pitt just puts one of them down. Mm-hmm. That coffee is dead to me.
Mm-hmm.
I will never forget that. I think that was so clever.
That was pretty funny. That's funny. Well,
Starbucks officially calls those splash sticks. They were introduced in 2008.
Mm.
And looks like they actually might be original. A Starbucks creation.
This would not surprise me, given their ubiquity and their need for something like this. That makes sense.
For 10 years, we've had those splash sticks. Wow.
Jeez. So let's celebrate. How do you want to celebrate? We should.
I'm going to go have a pumpkin spice latte and all the syrup is going to be at the very bottom.
Yep.
And
it's going to be. Dunaway's going to go buy Dunaway's going to go buy a whole set of plugs, if you know what I'm saying. That's what he's going to do.
That's right.
Some Starbucks are better than others. Mm-hmm. I think Ibbot and I have had the same experience. You get that splash stick and you stick it in the hole so you can shake up your PSL. Because if you don't shake that thing up, all the syrup's at the bottom.
I am not shaking. I've made a 100 degree hot drink.
I swirl like a wine from the top. Yeah,
exactly. When it's halfway, the drink is halfway down, then you begin the brandy, the brandy snifter swirl.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If you don't,
I'm bringing that flavor from the bottom to the top.
If you don't do it early enough, then you start getting the oversweet bottom third. So you got to start it about halfway down.
Yeah. Hopefully it's still warm then, but not too warm. Cause if you spill, then you can sue them and then you'll be in the news. And nobody likes
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Hey, how much do you think you have to pay a delivery person to show up at a specific time? Because Back to the Future, Back to the Future 2, they had not Eugene Levy, but one of the other SCTV guys, Flaherty, Joe Flaherty,
show up
years after this thing was postmarked to say, "Are you Marty McFly? We've had this package for years."
And I think in like the next 24 hours, it's nothing. Like Postmates will deliver whatever I want, whenever I want. But yeah, like if it's going to be way out in advance, then you have to start offering them half up front and the other half on delivery or something.
This guy did it for $500. He took $500 and he did it. And it was like a special one-off. And, you know, I assume John Doe. Late. Yeah.
It's still supposed to be late. There at 7. He was still like 7:05 or something when he finally showed up.
Yeah. I planned my whole movie around this event.
Right.
And you're going to be late.
And by the way, so they say California, we assume New York because the upstate comment and it feels like New York, but where they drive out to, that's like desert town.
It's Santa Clarita.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that where they filmed it, really? Santa Clarita?
I don't know.
It just looked like it.
I mean, but that does, you know, there's no part of New York where you drive for that short a time and get to where you cannot see any buildings or.
Yeah.
Or
I mean, upstate's like that kind of, but there's no desert. Like,
no.
That was desert and scrub, and I don't know. I kind of like that it's in an indescript place.
At first, I was thinking that was like, I'm like, is that trailer? Is that his childhood home? At first, I was like, what are we doing here? There's a trailer.
So I looked it up. The final scene was shot in Lancaster. So that's past Santa Clarita. Keep going. And then you get to Lancaster, California. And yeah, it's the, you know, like they could have just gone with it, right? They could have just said, oh, this is downtown L.A. It sucks.
Yeah. I prefer they didn't. I like that it's a ubiquitous city of from anywhere, anywhere, big city. I kind of like that. Yeah. You don't need to it's not important or germane to the story, and it lets you do something weird like drive out to a remote deserty area full of power lines. Like that's an iconic place. When that truck first starts coming down that dusty hill, that shot is just you can't take it out of your head. It's so good. Oh my gosh. I think this is I'm going to say it's his best movie, but I think it's one of Fincher's best. It's got to be up in the top 3 for me.
It is really well done. I mean, it's sets such a vivid scene that the scenery and the rooms they're in, the different locations that the film was shot become as much character as Freeman and Pitt and Spacey.
Yeah, it's just really good. The guy's awesome. Now, here's my question. Mm-hmm. The song at the end is a David Bowie song, if I'm not incorrect. Is that correct? But I don't know who's doing it. Is it a cover? Is it him? Like, I don't know. I just read that it was a...
It is a cover, I believe.
I threw Netflix out into the snow. I didn't right. listen to the ending song.
You threw Reed Hastings into the snow. Poof.
Netflix is like, hold on a second, let me show you some of our original content over this credits.
Let's see, where's the
so the it name is the this. Heart's Filthy Lesson, which is a David Bowie and Brian Eno song, and it was this version was performed by David Bowie.
Oh, that's interesting, because I couldn't hear Bowie when I heard it, and then later read that and went, oh, that was David Bowie. Really, that's a cool song. It is trippy.
Yeah. The only song that feels out of place was when they're in the diner getting ready to meet the informant and Haircut 100's Love Plus One. It feels like, ooh, are these all like hidden messages? Related, like we're getting clues about the
I did the same thing. I was like, all right, back off, Brian.
Right, exactly. No, it's Love Plus One. It's somebody loves the 80s.
Yeah, it's just on at the place, it's fine.
Right, exactly.
All right. Clips. You guys want clips?
Yeah.
Clips.
All right.
Yes, I would really like to know what's in the box.
I don't want any clip except for Brad Pitt saying what's in the box over and over.
I want a clip of John C. Reilly, and it's a very specific one. I'm hoping it's in here.
No, oh, wait. Man. John C. Reilly was in this movie? When was he
in
this?
Yes, he was in the helicopter California. Yelling out.
He was in.
That's John C. Reilly?
Yep.
I knew something
is it about,
familiar.
Is it about somebody calling something?
Yes.
Yep.
Good.
No cop would ever say, somebody call somebody.
Somebody call somebody.
All right. I capped that, but did not know it was him. That's crazy. Yes. Okay. Well, let's start with this one.
He played a badass from top to bottom in this. He never broke character.
All right.
badass.
Yeah. Well, here's your first bit, and then we'll rip through these.
I wasn't standing around guarding the Taco Bell.
Okay, he didn't stand around but guarding a Taco Bell. I just thought that
was... No, but every... just about every time you see Brad Pitt where he's not chasing or you know, where they're kind of just doing the regular crime-solving and researchy stuff, mm-hmm. he's eating all the time, just like every other Brad Pitt movie. Like every Ocean's 11 scene, he's like eating a shrimp cocktail or a bowl of pudding.
Yep.
By the way, put down your emails. We all meant to say John C. McGinley just now.
Oh, I'm sorry, not John C. McGinley.
Dr. Cox from Scrubs is who we were talking about.
Oh, yes. All right. Yes. I still didn't recognize him, but now I've...
Not Mr. Cellophane.
I took
John C. McGinley is California in this.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah. Yes, whoops.
This would have been okay. Hold on, when was Point Break? So this is post Point Break, because he was in that.
Yeah, like a year.
What
was that, a year? Right. No, this 94? Is like 90. Like 80,
yeah, that's right.
89 or 90.
Yeah,
Point Break was early, wasn't it?
Yeah, Point Break's older. This thing's like late 90s.
Okay, 91. Looked it up. 91.
Okay, so this is like 6 years late. 6 years later or something.
4 years.
I went to the library, checked out a book, and it was 91.
Here's a gross sniff. This is while he's in the spaghetti monster's house. So here's the sniff he made. He did that a lot in there. He was just like, oh.
Yeah, I would want to take as little of that into my nose as possible.
Well, but how do you get across that you're in a smelly place, right? Like, that takes good acting, and I really got it. It got through to me.
Yeah. I liked how Morgan Freeman's just not even bothered by it. She's like, yeah, whatever. I've seen this a million times. Brad
That's
Pitt's
the way
like,
this town is always smelled.
I haven't smelled nothing for 20 years.
You might say this is how every house with a big fat guy who's dead smells.
Another day, another guy buried in the spaghetti.
All right. The sergeant is back.
Come on. Somebody had a problem with a fat boy and decided to torture him.
Yeah. It's not quite the same as his wasn't that other thing, but there
I didn't know they stacked shit that high.
That's right. We got culture, I wrote.
Hey, we got culture.
Oh, it was the guy in the library.
The library.
I love those guys. I want a whole side quest with those guys.
Why does that library need so many security guards? Or are they like all off work and they just meet there?
I think it's
Why does it need every single table lamp turned on? I want to know.
I know. That library is an enchanted place, man. Pretty cool stuff going on in there.
I feel like this is like, I feel like this whole movie exists in lamp world where like this is an alternate universe where the overhead light was never invented. And all we have are lamp lights everywhere.
That lamp world sounds like a great, like, I don't know, parking mall, you know, like a strip mall kind of place.
Lamp World.
Welcome to Lamp World.
Come on down to Lamp World.
20% off.
Everything must go.
Yeah.
I think we have a Lamp World.
You might. You should go in there and see what they got. Probably lamps, I'm thinking.
Probably lamps.
Yeah.
With a few side tables.
Here's Morgan Freeman laughing ridiculously. Oh, my Lord.
That was so good.
Yeah, that was something else. Was so good, Here's how the music went down a lot. It's very relentless, very not stopping, goes, pushes that stuff.
Relentless and not stopping.
It's just really good.
Continue to go.
It really works for me as a thing.
Continues unfettered.
Yep. Here's, I don't know what this is.
Think about it.
Oh, think about it.
Think about it.
Think about it.
Think about it.
All right.
That's a meal. That's a get to keeper for other uses.
Yeah, I feel like I can use that for something. Here's John Doe's Kevin Spacey, 20 seconds worth.
I don't know how you found me, but imagine my surprise. I respect you law enforcement agents more every day.
Well, I appreciate that, John. I'll tell you...
No, you listen, all right? I'll be readjusting my schedule in light of today's little setback. I just had to call and express my admiration.
And this got that trope where... here, I'll play the thing. Where you... He knows to end the call right before the trace is finished.
Mm-hmm.
That is in everything, all things.
Yeah.
You could totally feel it too.
Yeah. Everything there ever was in a movie that involves somebody on a phone where the cops need to find him. Right.
There's always some guy with a pair of headphones looking at the guy answering the call, gesturing to keep him on.
Nodding. Hand signals.
By the way,
stretch it.
This isn't the first time they encountered him and even spoke to him, and they don't know it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there's another trope here that drives me absolutely batty, and that is when he shows up as the photographer at the first crime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, what, like, give me a look at him. Like, let me hear his voice a little bit. It was a really bad cameo.
You wanted the chance to figure it out that he was that guy?
I wanted the chance to know that guy. Like, if you're going to insert him in there, and you know what I mean? Like,
well, you can't get to know him too well.
It wasn't enough for me to connect it myself, and right. that bugs me.
Right. I liked it.
With that information?
I liked it because I didn't connect it.
Go to the library and figure it out.
I wanted the surprise later in the tub when he saw the photo and went, oh, that was that guy.
Like, even counted them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think they did that.
But
that...
I didn't get to share that surprise because I didn't see the guy enough. I didn't see his face or hear his voice.
Well, that was the idea, though, is that you wouldn't recognize him. Isn't that the idea? Because
they wouldn't even be able to either. Like if they saw him, they wouldn't be able to say, "Oh, that's the photographer guy." He only knows he's the photographer because he sees the photos from that angle and remembers.
Yeah, and it's a trope in itself to have some. You know, it's playing on our understanding of another trope, which is like, "Oh, hey, here comes a reporter who's a total dick, and he's pushing his way in here, and he shouldn't do that, and he shouldn't be here. It's a crime scene. Get out of here.
You should do that."
And so it plays on that. So we just think, oh, well, that's a one-off thing where he's annoyed, and we get to see more Brad Pitt because of it. This is Brad Pitt's character coming out who's angry at everybody or whatever, and you don't even think about it again until you see that tub. And then it's like, oh, my gosh, dude, what a diabolical wiener this guy was. So I think it worked. It worked for me. Well, or at least it did then. I don't know. Seeing it for the first time in 08, maybe that's – or in 2018, maybe that's different. But for me, it worked.
That's what that guy was wearing.
Here's a package.
Diabolical wiener.
It's massage parlor. So, I call this my diabolical wiener.
There you go. The D wiener. Here's a package under your arm.
Hey, everybody that comes in there has got a package.
All right, that's great.
Why? Okay, why does everybody have a package? What are they bringing in? I mean,
is that the porno guy?
What kind of place is this?
That's the porno guy. That's the quote unquote massage parlor dude. Yeah. By the way, what are the leather creator dude? What did he think that somebody was going to do with that thing? I mean, he said performance art, but still, it's like, I'm not making that. That seems like it could just go bad for somebody.
Yeah, right. I'm sure he thought
this is going to hurt somebody's hoo ha. I don't think so. I'm not making this.
I like the voice you've given him instead of the British one he had. He made me do it guy, the guy who was freaking out guy.
He made me do it.
Oh, man. He's just so, so intense.
It's like, what's his name from Breaking Bad? What's his name? Oh, my God.
Oh, from Breaking Bad? Wait. Not Jesse? Jesse?
Yeah, he sounds like Jesse.
A little bit. Let me try it again.
He made me do it.
Oh, it is a little Jesse.
A little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, that guy is joining, Aaron Paul is joining the cast of Westworld.
I heard about that. He'd make a good cowboy type, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Be all right with that. Also, they showed a trailer yesterday for that new Coen Brothers thing, The Ballad of... Can't wait. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Can't wait.
I am all in.
Simultaneous release in theaters and Netflix the same day because it's a Netflix production, and I'm very excited about it.
Oh, that's cool.
You think they could give us a weekend? Like, I would be okay waiting through one weekend for it to be in theaters before watching it on Netflix.
I don't care. Right. I want it early as I can get it, and I'd rather not go to a movie theater, so bring it home.
Just let's go watch it. The Ozarks. Just finish that. And then you can
I can't wait to watch season two of that. Yeah,
new season.
So good.
Is the new season good? Because I saw season one and loved it.
Yeah.
Season two's good?
I watched it. Watched the whole thing. It was very good.
All right. I got to watch that Norm MacDonald show, even though he's being kind of a dick in real life at the moment. Here's a detective. What's this detective thing? I don't know. Here it is.
Detective!
Oh, yeah, that bit. That's pretty good.
Detective. Detective. Detective.
It's Toby from the West Wing, everyone.
My client says there are two more bodies, two more victims hidden away. He will take Detectives Mills and Somerset, two of these bodies, but only Detectives Mills and Somerset, only at 6 o'clock today.
Why us?
Says he admires you.
My wife is binging West Wing, and it's weird to see Toby with, like, dark hair and
mustache,
a young face. Yeah, it's weird.
There was a lie in there that I caught as a lie, and everybody else was like, oh, we're in a bind. We have to go through with Kevin Spacey's plan because there's no way out of it. I'm like, the lie was that they would never find out what the last two were. And it's like, if they don't go through with his plan, guess what? They're still ahead in the box. There's a body back at home. They're going to find out what the last murder was, and there's not actually two.
Right.
And it's like, why are they
Well, it's a good trick, though. Okay, it's a good trick.
Just got a call from some delivery guy. He said he was supposed to go out in the middle of nowhere, and all he found was a dead dog.
Yeah. But the trick was that you got to remember, they had the meeting earlier where he says, all right, well, we've checked the blood. Some of it's his, but some of it's an unidentified victim. Unknown. And so in their minds, it's like, oh, well, we have to follow this because there's another victim we don't know anything about that's not even wouldn't even be connected to the Gwyneth Paltrow thing they don't know about yet, even though it was her blood. Mm-hmm. Like it's I think it was pretty good. That stuff all added up for me. It was all right. All right. Here's what's this? Iconic Forever. Oh, yeah. So here you go. Dunaway, your favorite part.
Put the gun down. I saw you with a box. What was in the box?
Because I envy your normal life.
Put the gun down, baby.
It seems that envy is my sin.
No, what's in the box?
Not till you give me the
what's
gun.
What's in the f***ing box?
Give me the gun.
Oh, it's so good.
Wow. What's in the box?
I love how he says the line like 8 different ways, and I love that. Like, yeah, it's, you know, you're so many different emotions, and it's like...
But, okay, take 18. This time you're going to put the emphasis on the word what?
Mm-hmm. Right. Box. Now give me a surprised version. What's in the box?
Yeah, all right, what's in the box? What is in the box? Yeah. His face that he makes when he's kind of like serious and pointing the gun and then kind of cries and leans and then comes back to that face.
But anger, you know, the anger. Yeah.
But the eyes still look just dead and shocked. Oh, it's so...
It is a brilliant performance by Brad Pitt, I think.
He's the right guy. You picked the right guy. Here's the call someone thing that apparently is Dr. Cox. So here you go.
Somebody call somebody.
Somebody call somebody. Anybody.
Call anybody. It's like, no, you call somebody.
You're the police. Yeah. Who are you going to call? Like, somebody call somebody. Oh, I don't call the police. Oh, wait, that's us.
Oh, that's us.
We need the parent police. Right, we need our police parents to come do some adulting here.
That was very odd. What an odd thing to say. Yeah. All right, final.
It's such an improv line, and they're like, I guess we'll just keep it because it sounds like it's on a microphone thing. Yeah.
Here's the bit where he turns into Red from Shawshank Redemption for just a second, and we get to hear him narrate. Here you go.
Ernest Hemingway once wrote, "The world is a fine place and worth fighting for." I agree with the second part.
Roll the credits.
Yes.
And Fincher originally didn't want that, but that was a conceit to the studio.
Oh, was it? Why?
Too bad, because it would have been nice just to have ended just as they walk
the scene. Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, just, you know, because the story was resolved.
It doesn't. There's not really anything that adds. I mean, we already know how Morgan Freeman feels about the job and the city and all that stuff. It's
It actually took away. It actually took away from me because I was like, I don't need to see that Brad Pitt's broken and that the chief police captain says we'll take care of him and it's like you can go retire now. And I'm like, I don't need all this.
Mm.
I can kind of guess what's going to happen from here.
Sure, we probably didn't need it, but I like to hear him narrate things, so I'll let it.
Yeah,
exactly. I want an alternate version of this movie that's just him narrating and nothing else. I don't want any other sounds.
I agree.
Okay.
I looked at Scooby's. Okay, yeah. Scooby's into it too. He says it's all right. Time for this. Film Sack checklist. Check it out. Gross? Check. Intense? Check. I wrote Brad Pittance? Check. What does that mean? Brad Pittance?
I
don't know, but it's
Brad
a funny
pitiful.
He's Pinton.
In the end, there's Brad Pitiful.
It might be Brad Pitiful at the end. Yeah.
That's good, too.
Star Trek connections include the following. Reg E. Kathy was Dr. Santiago in TNG, played Klingon Commander Morog in the 6th-season episode Aquiel in 1993. Paul Eckstein played a paramedic at the massage parlor in DS9 and Voyager, played two Jem'Hadars. So there's the thing. And then Leland Orser, crazed man in the massage parlor. He's in all kinds of... So that must be the guy...
That's the dude.
He's in tons of Star Trek. DS9 played a character called Guy. DS9 Lovik. Voyager played D'Jaren in an episode. And Enterprise played Loomis in the episode Carpenter Street. That dude was in all over
the
Star Trek.
Guess what? We're going to see him next week because he's in Pearl Harbor.
No way.
Loomis!
No way. That's very exciting. Does he get blown up? I hope. Anyway.
I'm not going to tell you.
Yep, yep. He's a battleship right there in the port. He gets blown up.
he plays a missile or a bomb.
Does he have a jagged, weird bulge in his pants? Because I'm a little worried now after seeing him in this.
Is he carrying a package under his arm?
Everyone is.
All right.
That's the surprise part.
The Twitter post is where you guys sum this thing up in 280 characters or less. The tradition is and goes that Randy starts. Randy.
So 7N. Gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, pride, lust. How could I ever forget a Saturday night at Imitow's? Ah!
I should have seen that coming. Nice job.
Yeah.
Brian Dunaway.
7N. Like a late night round of switchblade darts. I'm trying to sleep over here. And also, I can't stop thinking about what's in the box.
Yeah.
What's in the box?
Switchblade darts. That's right. I forgot he did
that. That was wild.
Yeah.
He got so mad that metronome.
He's so good, too.
Yeah. He was really good at it, and you would not have a dartboard after a couple of rounds.
No,
it would just fall apart.
Yep.
It's going to be a really good bristle, thick bristle dartboard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that thick bristle, yo.
Yep.
Finally, Brian Ibbett bringing up the rear.
I tried to make a prediction here. 7. So 7 in. Well, it's better than dancing around in grandma's panties, rubbing peanut butter all over yourself, predicting Randy's Twitter post, just like a Saturday night at Ibbett's house.
Nicely done. All right. Oh, you've all done great, but there's this. Oh, that's the wrong one. There's this.
Oh, is it chicken in the bucket?
There might have been.
Chicken in a box.
Might have been.
There was a chicken in the box. Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Done.
I'm going to have to throw you in the snow now. That's how this works.
Yeah.
Here's the alternate title. I have it right here on a piece of paper that is absolutely truly a piece of paper with the alternate titles on it. So 7N, that's number one. And number two was, that's a lot of spaghetti sauce. All right, moving on to emails. We got one from, let's see, who's this? Jack from Montgomery, Texas. You been there, Randy? Jack. Been to Montgomery?
Probably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Might have been. He says, aloha, Sackers. Ooh, another thing Randy likes. Aloha, Sackers. In high school, I worked at my local movie theater and was working when the Scooby-Doo movie was released, the first one that we watched. On occasion during that summer, before the film would premiere that Friday, we would watch certain films. This was one that we had watched. Like The Sack Crew, I remember watching Scooby-Doo and a pup named Scooby-Doo as a child. So when we were watching this, I was super excited. At the time, I was fine with what I watched. Unfortunately, I've listened to the episode before watching. I'm going to watch it now and see how terrible it is or if it holds up. I wanted to mention that Freddie Prinze Jr. has been up to since his teen throb days. That doesn't make sense. Has been up to. Okay, yeah. I remember a few years back watching Fallon and FPJ, I guess that's what his friends call him, FPJ was a guest. For a while, he was working for the WWE. I did not know that. He wrote scripts and storylines behind the scenes. So he'd write scripts for these wrestlers. He talked about how much fun he was having and doing it and all the relationships he'd built from that form of entertainment. Even though he has gone away and SMG gets more work, that's Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Wow, this guy just is all over the abbreviations, the initialisms.
Says
he's abbreviating, breves.
He says he is, in fact, doing some things here and there. Just wanted to weigh in on the Freddie Prinze Jr. Mystery. Best wishes and keep it all the sacking happening, Jack. Then he says, P.S., y'all should sack Summer Catch, another Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard film. I never even heard of this.
Oh, yes. It's actually on Netflix right now, and I did roll the first couple of minutes of it.
So it's like a teen rom-com sports movie, so that might be all right.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it needs some space.
It was all right from what I watched of it.
It's a little bit of space between that and Scooby-Doo, probably, but yeah.
Maybe yes, please.
Should be fine.
And it took me a while, but yes, I have been to Montgomery, Texas. I used to have a friend who had a cabin on Lake Conroe, not too far from Montgomery. We'd drive into town to go to the grocery store there.
Montgomery.
Beautiful part of the world. I would like to go back.
Very nice. Well, you hope you have a good time down there, Jack. And if you'd like to send your own emails in, like Jack, you can do it, filmsack@gmail.com. Our next film is the very long Pearl Harbor. So just know you're getting what you're getting into. This is also on Netflix. It's a
the movie takes place in real time.
Yep. This is where Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner met and began their whirlwind romance that would upend the Ben Affleck, Jenny from the Block relationship. So there's some fun to be had there. But then also, it's a, you know, big, dumb, loud movie from Michael Bay, and it's, you know, World War II and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
So,
oh, spoilers. That. Jeez.
Come on, Scott.
Leave
stop.
Something for people.
I've only seen parts of this movie, so this will be a my first complete viewing. So,
it should be a movie that'll live in infamy.
Yeah, it probably will. Nah. And I like Michael Bay. I've gone on record to say that I like Michael Bay movies that aren't Transformers movies. And so
we'll see how you feel about it after this movie.
Yeah, I may not. Yeah. I may change it, or who knows. So that's next week right here on FilmSack. FilmSack.com is our website. As always, you can email us, FilmSack@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @FilmSack. Leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's very helpful for us when it comes to rankings in our categories. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
What's in the box?
We'll see you next time. Bye. Yeah. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Hey, everybody that comes in there has got a package.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.